Yes, I saw the debates, both of them. Those 3 hours, 3.5 hours of my life, I will never get back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, Friday, the 28th of June. Good to be here. And I'll say this, the first night's debate was so amateurish. I thought I was back in high school, deciding who I would vote for class president. Now, no, the second night was better. And let me ask you something here. You heard, right? The first thing that they came out and said, the moderators, this was an NBC, MSNBC co-production. So they claim, at least, that they chose the order of the various competitors here at random. And so you had, because there's 20 people that qualified for the debate, so they did 10 and 10. 10 on Wednesday night, 10 on Thursday night, and they're totally at random. Now, here's the question, right? Of the top five Democratic contenders, and it's not a linear curve here. It's not linear at all. It looks like maybe a chart of the continental shelf. It is a drop-off. So you've got, who are the top contenders? The top five: Biden, Sanders, Warren, Buttigieg, and Harris. And four of the five top contenders end up the second night, the night that will, let's say, be better for ratings. Typically, Thursday night's a little bit better than Wednesday's. The first debate gets people talking about it. More people, more viewers likely to tune in the second night. But I have another theory here that I haven't heard anyone say. So here is my thought. I think with Elizabeth Warren surging in the polls, I think given the media's true love for her, my suspicion is that they put her among a sea of less qualified debaters to make her stand out more. And I don't have any proof of this. This is just an opinion as a keen observer of the media and the shenanigans that they pull. I just can't believe statistically that that's the way it would end up. When you roll the dice or pull straws or whatever it is. And this is, of course, the media, of course, NBC is going to manipulate this. Yes, yes. You don't trust anything that they say. And she was awful. I mean, Warren was on the first night awful. And every one of her lines is delivered with this, almost like she's under the influence of some kind of narcotic. And she's got that unblinking stare into the camera. And it's all memorized. It's polished. I get it there. But there is nothing there beyond that. Well, and the substance of it is terrifying, of course, because with her at the levers of the charge of the federal government, my gosh. I mean, she is a devout socialist. Make no mistake about it. Lot of softballs. The first night, in my view, completely boring. It was just boring, vanilla, nothing happened. And it was a puff piece designed to make Elizabeth Warren look good and not let anybody stand out. Now, the only, I think, entertaining part of Wednesday night was what? All the Spanish. Oh, my God. Oh, unbelievable. You know, it's when my parents came to this country and spoke a little bit of English, I think a fair amount of English, but not nearly as strong in their English as they are now. No one really rolled out the Czech speaking carpet to them. Disappointed as we were. So this is the new America. The Democratic Party is the party of reparations, abortions, and Espanol. You know what's really funny to me? Is if I was a white guy, let's say like Beto, okay? I know, he's from El Paso, but Beto O'Rourke, he's a white dude. And if I, as a white guy, was on stage with Julian Castro, who I from everything I've read is a native Spanish speaker, I would not be busting my Spanish out right out of the gate, which is exactly what Beto did. This guy is so dumb. He was so awful. if any of you out there think that Beto has any chance of becoming president, you got to get your head examined. So Beto, right in the beginning, opens his opening monologue, introduction, whatever you call it, right away goes into Spanish, and it was epic. But I would say, okay, so let's play it in. I want to play it not in chronological order, but I want to play this in levels of deterioration from good to terrible. I will let you linger in suspense who the worst one was. It was not Beto. So here is Julian Castro, who it was some sort of housing secretary under Obama and a congressman. And he is introducing himself in Spanish.
Me llamo Julian Castro y estoy postulando por presidente de los Estados Unidos.
My name is Julian Castro and I'm running for the president of Mexico. Sorry, United States. Then came Beto. Here's number the second bit of Spanish that we heard that night. Listen.
Necesitamos incluir cada persona en el éxito de esta economía. Pero si queremos hacer eso, necesitamos incluir cada persona en nuestra democracia. Cada votante necesitamos la representación y cada voz necesitamos escuchar.
Oh, and you should have seen him when he was doing this. He was sweating. His brow was beating. You could tell he was nervous about it. Look, if you're not, here's a rule. If you're doing one of these performances on stage, whether it's a debate, a speech, presentation at work, don't step out of your comfort zone unless you absolutely have to. Like it's in your control whether you do the Spanish bit or not. I don't care how many of your advisors say, oh, you got to get up there and lay out the Espanol. If you're not going to be comfortable doing it and you're going to sound halted in your speech, you don't have to speak Spanish to hear how bad it is. Right? So I think it was just a terrible miscalculation. He ended up looking like a bozo. Of course. That's what I thought until Cory Booker, Spartacus himself, decided to speak Spanish, and this is the calamity that ensued.
La situación ahora es inaceptable. Este presidente ha atacado, ha demonizado los inmigrantes. Es inaceptable. Voy a cambiar este.
Yeah, the president and his avocado is what I heard. The president has attacked and demonized immigrants. It's unacceptable, and I will change this now. Listen to one more time.
La situación ahora es inaceptable. Este presidente ha atacado, ha demonizado los inmigrantes. Es inaceptable. Voy a cambiar este.
I have no words for this. So Sherry and I were in stitches. We're watching this, and I know, right? It's not Telemundo. But we were inundated with all this. So I don't think it's a good look. And I think this is it's metaphorical for the challenge that the Democratic Party faces, because in its efforts to pander to every subgroup, and I don't mean this pejoratively at all. I just mean every subsection, every little faction within our country. One-legged, you know, homosexuals. Who else? You name it. I mean, it's just breaking down all this micro-targeting, pandering to minority groups and others, right, among us, instead of talking to us broadly as Americans. I think it's off-putting to other people. So I think, yes, dye-in-the-wool Democrats are listening to this. Yes, we're doing outreach. We're doing outreach. But there's a lot of people in the Midwest, flyover country, but, you know, Rust Belt too, critical states, swing states, if you will, that are listening to this. And it's like, this is absurd. You know, I remember hearing from my grandpa when he came from Germany or you know, France or wherever he comes to this country. People are thinking this, right? That we are, in fact, a nation of immigrants. And as a nation of immigrants, right, we in the past, it was pretty freaking hard. And if you didn't come from Ireland, if you didn't come from Great Britain, didn't come from Canada, or other English-speaking countries, the first thing you did when you got here as a German, as an Italian, as a Russian, is you learned the freaking language. That is what my parents did. Without the language, you are doomed, right, to be a second-class citizen. And it's not racism. It's not discrimination. It's function. It's ability to integrate. And it's on you, completely on you. And so for generations, immigrants in this country have done that. So I think this pandering, I really do think it backfires. And it was beautiful to watch. Now, night two, last night. Of course, this is where all the heavy hitters were, right? So the big team here was Biden, and we had Kamala Harris and Pete Buttigieg, Bernie Sanders, of course, he was there. I completely disagree. I strongly disagree with the characterization this morning that Kamala Harris wiped the floor with Joe Biden. Here is the clip that everybody is talking about. Kamala Harris, this was, by the way, very well prepared in advance. She had this ready to go, evidenced by the fact that almost immediately her Twitter account sent out a photograph of herself as the little girl that she's referencing. Listen to this.
And it's personal, and it was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. And it was not only that, but you also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools, and she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
Well, that, by the way, was a total lie. And today has been discussed fairly broadly that her school had been integrated. Somebody went back, looked at yearbooks, and her school, the little school in Berkeley that she went to, not Cal, not the University of California, Berkeley, but the school that she went to apparently had been integrated many years before she was even born. So, anyway, this aside, I watched it this morning, and I'll tell you, I had seen some of the reports overnight come in characterizing the exchange between her and Biden, and the impression these reports all gave was that Biden was turned into this stuttering, sputtering mess. Here is just a portion of Joe Biden's, I think, very forceful answer to her. Listen.
Mischaracterized my position across the board. I did not praise racist. That is not true. Number one. Number two, if we want to have this campaign litigated on who supports civil rights and whether I did or not, I'm happy to do that. I was a public defender. I didn't become a prosecutor. I came out and I left a good law firm to become a public defender. When in fact, my city was in flames because of the assassination of Dr. King.
And I'll say this, too. The moderators gave Biden time. They let him answer on this. He went on to say, look, everything I've done in my career, I ran because of civil rights. I continue to think we have to make fundamental changes in civil rights. And those civil rights, by the way, include not just African-Americans, but the LGBT community. I'm not defending the substance of any of this. I don't think that that's relevant. I'm just letting you know that this is where many people don't watch the debate and then rely on the mainstream media to inform them of how the debate went. And sometimes it's not accurate at all. And in my view here, I think that this was mischaracterized. The other observation, though, is regarding Biden is not doing well. He actually, ironically, was at his best at the moment where everybody's saying he lost it. But I would say throughout the debate, his biggest mistake, and this is what I can't play for you because it doesn't work on audio. This is a radio show. It's a theater of the mind. So I'm going to describe it to you. So Biden's up there and he's at the center of the stage because they place the candidates based on how they're polling. So the strongest candidate, if you're wondering how they're lining them up on the stage, the guy in the middle, the gal in the middle is the strongest candidate. So in the first debate, that was Warren. In the second debate, it's Biden. So he's front and center. He's got the power position, head of the table, if you will. And every time he wants to speak, he raises up his finger like he's in the third grade. Excuse me, teacher. Can I go to the bathroom, please? And it was so diminishing. Do you remember Trump this time last 4 years ago, whatever it was, whenever he was running for president in the Republican primary? Do you think that he ever said, excuse me, I'll give me, he just went in there. He just went in there. It was like going into the jungle with a machete. And he did it because that's how Trump rolls. And that's how you cut through the noise when you've got so many bodies up on stage. And I think this was a terrible look for Biden. It was a terrible look, and it opened up opportunities for people like Kamala Harris, who, Kamala Harris wasn't. She just charged in there. She was, very forceful. And he would stop himself. The clock ended. It was like, does he think he's going to get put in timeout? Does he think he's going to get a slap on the wrist, or they're going to take away his afternoon snack if he goes over one more time on the clock? Bizarre. Very weak. Okay. I have a few other clips here and some observations from this. By the time this is done, you will feel like you were there, which kind of is going to be a nauseating feeling for you. So I'm just warning you ahead of time. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rogowski, Sam Nation, election betting odds are up big time for Kamala Harris. This following the debate, she rose 10%, which is a big number, to the highest 23.6% among the Democratic primary candidates. Biden, after the debate, dropped by 7.8% down to 19.6%. So now there is a delta of roughly 4% between Kamala and Joe. So I think these election odds, betting odds, are obviously a very good snapshot of immediate emotional reactions to a news cycle. I do think they're more accurate than polling numbers because people are putting their money down based on these odds. And I think that people generally are more mindful of where they put their money versus how they interact with some pollster when they're just trying to get back to dinner and having had their meal interrupted with a phone call. So this, I look at these numbers, but bear in mind, it reflects what I was talking about just now, that the media has characterized Kamala Harris as having taken down Joe Biden. And that's the narrative that is coming out of this. I don't think it's entirely true, though I will say that Kamala Harris was very strong in this debate. And I'll say one more thing. I don't think it can last. I've been following her and some of the things that she says now for a while. She is not a bright bulb. Sorry, she's not. And I've heard her conduct a number of interviews, and it's never that great. Yeah, somebody on Twitter. Oh, it was Anna Navarro, the CNN's fake Republican. Anna Navarro today said, oh, yeah, Kamala Harris, she's the... Actually, I think she put a pretty racist hashtag. Something about magic. Anyway, in a reference to Kamala Harris's color, which is just dangerous. But what you know, when you're Anna Navarro at CNN, you can get away with that. But she said, look, this, can you picture the thrust of her tweet was, can you imagine Kamala Harris up on stage with Trump in a debate, she'll wipe the floor with him. And this, folks, is just not true. It's fantasy thinking. Because it's one thing to joust a little with Joe Biden, who is half dead. So it's the Special Olympics of debating. But against Trump, that's a whole nother game. And Trump will be brutal. He's not going to hold any punches. The Democrats on this stage don't want to punch back at Kamala Harris. They don't. They don't want to wear that. Trump is going to give zero you-know-whats about punching back. So as per usual, Anna Navarro is lost as lost can be. Now, I'll tell you, too, that Eric Swalwell, who no one's heard of, he's polling in sub 1%, said this about Joe Biden and how perhaps Joe just shouldn't be even part of this debate.
I was 6 years old when a presidential candidate came to the California Democratic Convention and said, it's time to pass the torch to a new generation of Americans. That candidate was then Senator Joe Biden. Joe Biden was right when he said it was time to pass the torch to a new generation of Americans 32 years ago. He's still right today. If we're going to solve the issues of automation, pass the torch.
Hey, pass the torch. Did you hear the booing? Yeah, because this is, isn't this ageism? Yeah, they're all coming for Joe. And this is the ultimate thing about debates early on. When you have a front runner, it's the front runner's debate to lose. It's Joe Biden's race to lose at this point. And so he is going to draw all this fire. Joe Scarborough was freaking out this morning saying this was a terrible debate. In fact, by the way, and he works for MSNBC. And he's literally begging people not to watch. If you haven't seen it, don't watch it. As a Democrat, do not watch it. It was terrible. It's a circular firing squad. It was awful. They should be fighting against Trump and not each other. What did he say? They're all in the they're all in the trenches with their bayonets and loaded rifles. And instead of charging against the enemy, they all turn on each other. Yeah, Joe, that's the Democratic Party. Enjoy. All right, back right after this. Sam Rojosky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Yeah, there is something perverse about Beto. And I don't mean, okay, perverse may not be the right word, just damaged. There's something damaged about him and his frantic efforts to be Hispanic. I said to my wife watching the show, I think Beto is trans-Hispanic. Meaning he's transitioning from being just a regular Irish white dude to being a Hispanic male. She says, you can't say that on the show, Sam. You can't do it. So now I did it, and we'll see what comes of it. But yes, it was remember Rachel Dolezal, the Czech lady from the Midwest who decided that she was African-American? And became a local NAACP chapter president until they discovered the fraud, her race fraud, and kicked her out of the NAACP. but hey, I made the point back then. I guess I can make it now in defense of Beto, whatever his name is. In America, you get to be who you want to be. And that's the way it is. Now, the Espanol, I'll tell you, the Spanish continued outside of the event. And this Bill de Blasio, who, again, he's a sub one percenter. And that, if you're a one percenter economically, that's a really good thing. If you are a one percenter in the run for president, unless you're Trump in 2015, it's not a good thing. So he gets out and he holds a rally in Miami outside of the debate after Wednesday night, because he was in the first debate. And during this rally, he goes out and he decides to use some Spanish, too, because I think he was having some FOMO. For those of you who are not in the know, means fear of missing out. Listen to this.
I'm going to give you a prediction. Are you ready for a prediction? The day is coming soon here in Miami-Dade where you will win this struggle once and for all.
Hasta, what is it? La victoria siempre. Yes, this, of course, is a phrase used often by Che Rolex Guevara, the Argentine revolutionary and what would we call him? What was Eric Holder to Obama? Wingman. Yeah, he was Castro's wingman. But like all good communists, he was very well off and wore a Rolex. But don't worry, he was out looking for the people and for their well-being. Also a mass murderer. So, bit of a problem. Bill de Blasio got called on it and immediately apologized. And this is why Bill de Blasio is a total loser. If de Blasio is an avowed socialist, okay, then he should be totally fine quoting Che Guevara. And his play on this would have been, well, I don't agree with everything that he said, but this is a revolution and Trump is the worst person and we do need to fight and we are waiting for the day when everything's going to be unicorns, rainbows, peaches and cream, et cetera, et cetera. That was the answer. And instead he just goes, oh yeah, okay, sorry. And you know why? Because de Blasio and all these Democrats want to cater to everyone. And they're dumb as a bag of hand. He literally uses a Che Guevara quote in Miami, which is the heart of the Cuban-American community in America. And the Cubans, of course, are here because they suffered profoundly under the dictatorship of Castro. So this, all of this very tone-deaf, dumb, stupid, and even bad politics all around mixed into one. De Blasio is going nowhere. And that's a good thing, because if you've been to New York lately, that is not how you want this country to look. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski here. Yes, I will tell you that looking at watching the debates, both of them, I don't see how the Democrats come out of this with any kind of political viability, because I am just not sure, based on polling, based on my general good sense of the temperature of this country, I am just not sure that their radical plans are what America wants right now. It's free. Yeah, it's free everything, isn't it? If you listen to any portion of the debate, it's all about free and to pay for it taxes or to pay for it. You'll see, it's going to be magic. It's all going to work out. But in both debates, both rounds of candidates were asked whether or not they would give up their own health plan, which in many cases, these guys who are in government have these Cadillac health plans, not even Cadillac, Rolls Royce. Come on, Sam, get with the time. So big time, great plans. The kind of health care you and I would dream of, even me as a business owner. I don't have the kind of health plan that a senator has. Trust me. Very few of them raise their hands that they would want to give up their private plans. And yet the candidates that are leading in the polls are all talking about single payer. And the part of this, right, that is delusional is they think that the premise is that by shifting the administration of health care, the assignment of and paying of benefits, the government will operate in a far more efficient manner than, let's say, Blue Cross. Now, to those of us who live in the real world, we know this. You don't have to be an economist. We know this is insane. What did I tell you 2 weeks ago about a colleague of mine who goes to the DMV, tries to get something done here in California, dealing with it? And the DMV tells her, you know, this is going to be really complicated. If we handle this here, you might want to go over to AAA. Literally, the DMV, state-run organization that, with the exception of AAA, has a monopoly on registering vehicles. There's no profit built into it, right? It's run by the government. AAA is working to make a profit. They make profit on memberships, and they make profit per a little bit per transaction that the state kicks back to them. So they're profit-oriented. But the state isn't. The profit-oriented enterprise does it better. Why? Well, because the profit-oriented enterprise, by virtue of wanting to make a profit, by virtue of greed, is working constantly to make it efficient and has to keep those customers coming back because I have a choice. Well, I don't really have a choice. I can go to the DMV or go to AAA. But if AAA were as bad as the DMV, nobody would buy the AAA membership, right? Well, this is how it is with healthcare. Yeah, Democrats want choice when it comes to abortion. They're all about choice then, but it's single when the most important thing, like picking your doctor. Well, they all say you're going to get to pick your doctor, but the reality is you won't. In the end, you won't. It's a lie. It was a lie under Obamacare, and it's a lie right now when it's coming out of Bernie Sanders' mouth. Trust me. But the part of it that you don't even need to look into a crystal ball to determine, you know, if something's true or not true, you've got to think of what the government runs that works well. Even the Department of Defense, when you look at the military, which is a tremendous organization run by the government, it is so inefficient. This is where you hear about the $75,000 hammer. You know, the Pentagon ordering things that they don't need. It is insane. The government is not the organization you want in your healthcare. The government is not the answer to our problems. And yet the entire Democratic debate was saturated with, we have a problem, government must solve it. We have this issue, the government will fix it. And it's just, I'm telling you, I think most of us have interacted with the government enough to know that they are not a reliable provider of services. I mean, if you're in the VA, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Been to a county hospital lately? You want that as the gold standard of treatment? But the most alarming, I'll tell you, the most alarming, besides all the free giveaways, and my wife the whole time is going, oh my gosh, we're free, it's not free, somebody has to pay for it. She's screaming at the screen. I listen, calm down, get you a cocktail. But the biggest part here is immigration, and I've had it up to my gills. I will get to this. I'm going to tell you exactly what I think of this, and I'm coming at it. I'm coming at it as a guy with parents that came to this country legally. And I've told you about their story before, but I want to give you a big picture overview to cut through the BS right now. This whole narrative about immigration, every time these guys and people in the media are talking about the caged children, I want to get to this. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rejofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word incorrect thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation. Yes, I know. Putin and Trump met a few hours ago, and the media is already having a cow about this. Yeah, did you catch this? Where is it? Oh, okay. So they have a press conference. I think Putin says something. I didn't catch the first part of it. I only saw the part where Trump is telling the reporters in the pool what's going on. And then they open it up to questions. And because the media is dumber than a bag of hammers, the first thing that they ask Trump is, what do you think? What do you think? It's a G20 summit. Trade's a big issue. National security's a big issue. So what do they go straight to? They ask about, have you talked, Mr. President, have you spoken to President Putin about election meddling? And Trump, I just love this. Trump basically says, oh, yeah, well, hey. And he looked at Putin and put his finger up in the air. He says, don't do it. Don't meddle in the election, okay? In a joking way. And the Democrats have lost their minds. The media this morning has just erupted. I'm getting all these reports in real time as I was in the middle of show prep when all this was going down. You know what my take is on this, right? What an absurd expectation it is to have President Trump or any U.S. president sit down with Putin and say, hey, no, seriously, don't interfere. Look, first of all, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it with a straight face. I would have to sacrifice all my credibility because it would imply that I believe that Putin is an earnest partner, a trustworthy partner. And if I tell him, don't do something, and he says, but of course, yes, no, I won't do it, that he then will not actually do it. It's absurd. In business, you don't ask people for things you know they won't deliver on. You don't do it. In the real world, in the world that isn't fantasy land, in Ivy League colleges and journalism school, okay? In the real world, you don't do that. This whole narrative, how many times do they ask him this, right? Have you spoken to Putin about interference? No, I didn't bring it up. How? Oh, my gosh. Trump met with Putin for 3 hours, and he didn't bring up interference. See, they're in cahoots. Do you know how many elections we interfere in? Do you know how diminishing it'd be? I'm just picturing myself, and I know how bad the Russians are. Okay, I'm an Eastern European, have that heritage. We are not big fans of Russia. I'm just putting that there, as many of you know that have followed the program for some time. Putin's an ex-KGB man. He, to me, is a loathsome individual. No trust from me to Putin. If I'm president, though, and I know because I get the daily brief and I've had people in the intelligence community confirm this to me, we interfere in elections all over the world. In fact, when Obama went to Putin and said to him, I told him not to interfere. He came back and he told the media and everybody says, oh, perfect, perfect. He did everything he could. Do you remember Obama, how we were interfering with the Israeli election and we were actively sending money? The CIA was engaged with the opposition, giving money to unseat Benjamin Netanyahu. This is a widely known fact. I cannot imagine how that phone call came with beta male Obama saying to Putin, no, Putin, you know, I really need you to cut out this election. He goes, look at what you're doing right now in real time. If you can't say something to an opponent with a straight face, with the facts on your side, don't say it. Don't go there. This is elementary. So that is what Trump is doing. All of this reporting on this is a total joke. It's just a joke. Now, what isn't a joke and what isn't funny to me is where we have gotten with this immigration debate and in all of the noise and the debates that have occurred and these sound bites that are getting a lot of airtime. We have missed a critical Trump victory that happened the last couple days on Capitol Hill. Now, I will break this down for you because I think there's certain components to it. There's the politics, the procedural components, and I will get to those because I think they're fascinating. And if you're wondering what I'm talking about, I'll just reminding you that this week started with Trump ostensibly capitulating to the Democrats and putting off some very serious ICE raids. You remember this? Now, I'm telling you, Trump, in the end, it was an absolute brilliant move. I will explain why all of that happened. But in order to set it up and in order to get us all on the same page, I need to talk about this border crisis. The reason we have a border crisis is because we do not have a zero tolerance immigration policy. What do I mean by zero tolerance immigration policy? Zero tolerance for coming into this country without authorization. I don't care what you call it. I don't care. Illegal, whatever it is. There's two ways to enter any country. You sneak in or you go in through the front door. We all understand intuitively, even the most dim-witted Democrat understands what it's like to have a house guest ring the front door, say, "Hey, Bob, nice to see you. Can I come in?" versus the Hamburglar sneaking in through the open patio door in the back. We are a country that is being filled with Hamburglars, okay? I'm not being pejorative. I am saying that people are coming into this country without authorization, and by virtue of that, we do not know who they are. The reason countries have an immigration policy is to know who's in the country. And that, I'm just going to say this, that for a country like us is important. First thing is the economy. An economy can only sustain so much of a labor force, okay? Before the cost of labor, the pricing for labor drops by virtue of oversupply. Now, that's just a fact. It's an economic fact. The other part of this is a safety thing, is a national security issue. We have not just Hispanics crossing the border who are poor, impoverished people from Guatemala, from Mexico, El Salvador. No, we have people crossing the border today. I saw a report. West Africans are crossing into the country. They've got suitcases. They're literally swimming across with suitcases and they're coming. We don't know who they are. People from the Middle East. We don't know who they are. We have bad actors sneaking into this country. And mark my words, there's going to be a terrorist attack sooner or later perpetrated by these bad actors. We don't know who they haven't come in. We don't have photographs of them. We don't have their fingerprints that we've taken at airports. We don't have anything. And these people, these potentially bad actors, are hiding in swarms and swarms in the masses of economic migrants that are coming to this country, right? So by and large, right, most of the people here are coming here not to commit terrorist acts, but because they're seeking economic opportunity. I understand that. But the fog that is hiding the bad actors is coming to this country because we have all but declared to the world that we can't possibly take care of this problem. We do not have the mechanism to deport you. If you try to sneak into the European Union and you get caught, you get deported, bam, smack, you're out of there, you know, lickety split. You try to immigrate into Switzerland, bam, smack, you're out of there. Any country, China, you want to try illegally immigrating into China, you're out of there. Mexico, you're out of there. So people don't try it. You don't try it if you think that your chances of success are 1%. The reason people are coming here is because they think their chances are 95%, 98%. Those are good chances. Those are good odds. And people are taking them. The problem is the law. The law is set by Congress. And Republicans and Democrats are at fault for a terrible system of laws that are essentially designed to make it hard for the authorities to get rid of people that come here illegally. Plain and simple, period. And as a consequence, a lot of good people are coming into the country illegally because they believe statistically they will get away with it. The terrible image of the drowned child with her father that we saw this week. This is a consequence of Congress not doing what Congress should do and it's not a question of too much enforcement. It's too little enforcement. Barriers along, you want to say, you remember when we said that the walls are inhumane and racist? You know, if there was a virtually impassable border between us and Mexico, that drowning would never have happened. Why? Because no father would risk such a move for a 1%, 2%, 3%, 5% chance of crossing into the U.S. And the dirty secret is that Republicans and Democrats for years and years have not, they are stuck between publicly proclaiming, Republicans especially, publicly proclaiming to their base, we are anti-illegal immigration. But then they refuse to put teeth into law that would dissuade future waves of migration into this country. Why? Cheap labor. Cheap labor is good for big business. The various pro-business factions within the Republican Party certainly keep various congressmen and senators from acting. And the Democrats claim to care about immigrants. They claim to care about working people. But really what they want is votes. And if you're a blue-collar worker, if you're a union shop guy or gal, and you're a wage earner, I'm telling you right now, and this isn't nativism, it isn't racism, it's economics. The more workers are there willing to work for less money than you, how much do you make an hour? If you make $30 an hour, $40 an hour, and some guy comes into the country and he's willing to do it for 15 cash for less than minimum wage, eventually that is going to affect you economically. It will. Supply and demand is real. And the Democrats lied up there on that stage both nights. They claim they're all about the working classes. They claim that they want that $15 minimum wage to help you. But the reality is the $15 minimum wage is just further insult and injury to the consequences of this insane immigration policy that they have. And virtually every Democrat up on stage in both debates on Wednesday and on Thursday said that they don't believe it should be illegal to come into this country for economic opportunity, meaning they are for a complete open border. No enforcement. So you're probably wondering how this plays out, or at least how it is playing out right now, and I'll get to the substance of what's been happening behind the scenes. Trump is in an impossible position. It really is. It's funny because the only thing, he can't change the law. He also can't, the Treasury Department prints money, but he can't get money allocated for border protection. He has to beg a democratically controlled House of Representatives to sign on for funding. All Trump can do is he can enforce the law. That's it. So he can affect immigration by, let's say, putting more resources on the border and perhaps, I guess, deploying the military. There's some conflicting thoughts on how you can do that, if that's, you know, something that can be done. But basically, Trump can just use ICE and ICE, if they don't have the money for the overtime or for the extra officers that they need, they can't patrol a 2,000-mile border that's wide open. They can't do it. He can't build a wall if he doesn't get the money. So he's stuck with limited enforcement options. Meanwhile, yes, families are coming across the border. Kids are getting locked in cages. You hear that left and right. We need more money. We need money for bigger facilities, for emergency facilities, to rent facilities. And it's been the Democrats this entire time that have refused to give Trump the money. They've flat out refused. And why? Because every time you see Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez crying hysterically about the poor children, she is the one who is absolutely, completely, and totally against allocating any funds so those children and families and quote-unquote good people who came into the country illegally can get the care or get the resources that they need. Now, it's cynical. It's all part of a plot. Withhold the money from Trump, make Trump look bad as a win, make the facility so overrun that they have no choice but to release people. All the while, they sit in Congress and they're the ones that could literally change the rules. They could change the U.S. code, but they don't. It is awful, and it makes me sick. And the lack of understanding of the subject infuriates me. More on this when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Vanity Fair this morning. Abigail Tracy writing, Chuck Schumer effed us, quote unquote. Progressives rage as Democratic tensions erupt over the humanitarian border crisis. What's this all about? It all ties together. I will explain. Nancy Pelosi. I know she is the favorite whipping woman. Common phrase is whipping boy, but I want to make it gender appropriate. Whipping woman of the conservative right. I get that. Let me tell you something about Nancy Pelosi. She is a pragmatist. You think she's extreme? You don't know what extreme is. And Nancy Pelosi did not stay at the top of that S pile known as the Democratic Party by being politically inept. This crisis, the fund, everything that I was just explaining, the hypocrisy of Democrats, of the radical Democrats, left-wing faction, AOC, Rashida Tlaib, all these people that were withholding funds from the Trump administration, and in effect, adding to the misery of these migrants that were being detained at the border, the press this week began to, very subtly, but nonetheless, began to turn against them. And Pelosi is very savvy, and what she did is she brought the Senate bill. They couldn't agree on writing a bill in the House. Well, why? Because a lot of these committees are controlled by some of these wacky Democrats. So, well, you're right. I mean, the people she can't control. The socialist Democrats, the wackadoodles. So Nancy Pelosi very strategically went to Chuck Schumer, and Chuck Schumer went to Mitch McConnell in the Senate. And the Senate came up with a funding bill, roughly $4.5 billion, to give money to ICE. And it passed today. It passed. And AOC and the, again, the radical left of the Democratic Party are beside themselves. I understand that AOC was seen, she was crying on her way leaving the floor of the House of Representatives when this passed, because it first passed in the Senate. They sent it down. And so an upvote in the House meant that, of course, the bill would pass. Who voted for it? I'll tell you, a lot of reasonable Democrats and virtually every Republican. Because it's the right thing to do. You want to solve this problem at the border? I'm serious. If you want my solution for this, the solution to the border crisis is to build a wall. And as a step two is set up catapults. I'm legal catapults. Okay, I'm not actually proposing catapulting people back across the border, but you cross the border, bing, you go back. Cross the border, bing, you go back. Cross the border, bing, right? I mean, as soon as it's this big thing and da-da-da and you're, you know, and da, no, you just get, right, go back. You know, these, if you spend the equivalent of, it's a lot of money, like $6,000-$7,000 to a coyote, to these are the smugglers, the human smugglers, to send you across the border, you've saved up a lot of money to cross over. So when you get sent back, it's a little bit of an economic setback, too. And then the other part of it is you must, through pressure like Trump did, by hook or by crook, get Mexico to not allow. It's a big country. Mexico is a long country. So a Honduran, El Salvadorian, Central American who's coming up through Mexico, the fact that Mexico couldn't stop this is absurd. It's shameful. And it's sabotage against our country. And if you want to do trade with us, if you want to be our friend and our ally, you do not let giant swarms of Haitians, even, right? Today I read Haitians, mentioned, you know, West Africans, Middle Easterners, North Africans. It's dangerous stuff. So I think that these are the solutions. And it's actually exactly the opposite of everything that was said by the Democrats in this debate. It is more enforcement, stricter rules, and fewer people will die. That is a fact. And if you want to open, if you want to, as Trump says, he wants merit-based immigration. He wants a lot of immigration. We're all fine with that. But we get to pick and choose who we let into this country. I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. We want more. Maybe we want more engineers. Maybe we want. There is a certain need in our country. Perhaps there is a particular decade when we don't have enough doctors. So we import doctors. We want more doctors to come in legally. Right? That's how an immigration policy should work. The Democrats, what they want is a permanent subclass of people. They speak Spanish to them, hoping they never learn English. I'm serious about this, by the way. I am dead serious because an integrated immigrant in the long run is less likely to be a Democrat than one that isn't, because it's the immigrants that live in the shadows that are fearful and are being told every day that it's the Democratic Party. We're here to save you. We're going to help you. We're going to provide for you. We're going to do all this for you. The Democratic Party wants this permanent subclass in place as a foundation for their future political support. And it is absolutely shameful. It is absolutely awful. And we should not be okay with it. So, yeah, I'll circle back around to this, though, just as a closing thought. So when Trump said, you know what? I'm going to hold off on these raids. I'm going to hold off on them. I'm going to give Nancy Pelosi some time. And a lot of people on the right mocked it and said, oh, my gosh, I can't believe Trump caved like this. Who is he? Oh, my gosh. But he knew all this was happening, and he was assured that this would pass. And Mitch McConnell was telling him, no, we're going to get this done. Well, he had to call off the race. I'll explain that when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Ostensibly, the real reason Trump called off the ICE raids was because either his own ICE chief, Border Patrol chief, or the acting DHS secretary, one of these two goobers, apparently, spoke to the Washington Post and let them know that these raids were coming. The way these raids work is they have to be a surprise. But as I reflect on this, I wonder if maybe this was all part of a plot, too. You've got, well, sure, you leak it out. Yeah, self-inflicted, exactly. Or an orchestrated leak. You let it out in the middle of the debate with the Democrats. You let it out that you're planning these wide-scale raids. And remember what states they were supposed to be in. They're all blue states. They're all, you know, basically in Pelosi's backyard, San Francisco. And this, I think, might have been a tactical maneuver on the part of Trump to pressure the Democrats into financing the bill. And he may very well have made a deal with them saying, look, OK, all right, I'm going to hold off. Get me this funding. And I'll hold off. And it's the only thing he can do, right? Because as the president, he's in charge of enforcement. He oversees the Department of Homeland Security that enforces immigration law and border protection. That's it. So that's you can play the cards you're dealt. And he's got those cards and he played them. And if I suspect this is how it all went down. So I guess in time we'll get the full backstory and know exactly what the scoop was here. In other news, have you heard about Google? If you haven't, well, turn on your computer and open your browser, and there's Google. No, that's not what I meant. I meant, have you heard about what happened to Google in the news? If you follow the mainstream media, you have no idea what went down. Project Veritas has some great undercover video. I'll explain what it means, everything about it, when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Okay, Google is messing with their algorithm to make Google searches more PC. That, I think, is the most innocent way of explaining what they're doing. What they're actually engaged in is election tampering. The irony of this development about Google is that we are so busy and so worried about Russia interfering with our election, Russian bots, correct, driving various searches and feeding us misinformation, when Google is engaged in they have a plan of how to defeat Trump in 2020. Here is on video. Now, the audio is a little bit fuzzy. It's because this is a secret recording done by Project Veritas. That's James O'Keefe. One of his people did this. He's the guy who exposed Acorn, if you remember this, during the Obama administration. So he's got a, I believe, a female operative posing as a, I think she's got herself into Google with a meeting with Jen Janai. Jen Janai is the head of responsible innovation at Google Global Affairs. So she is like something we would describe her as a top ethicist for Google. And here she is on tape at a restaurant. They're having a happy hour. Margaritas are flowing. And here is what Jen Janai from Google is saying about the election and how they don't want it to repeat itself.
We all got screwed over in 2016. Again, it wasn't just us. It was like people got screwed over. The news media got screwed over. Like, everybody got screwed over. So now we're rapidly being like, what happened there? How do we prevent it from happening again?
We all got screwed over in 2016. Again, it wasn't just us. It was the people. They got screwed over. The news media got screwed over. Everybody got screwed over. So we're rapidly been like, happened there, and how do we prevent it from happening again? Okay, last I checked in 2016, the media went full throat anti-Trump. It was Trump that got screwed over by the media. It's not like Trump got a fair shake from the media at all, then or now. So I fail to understand how the media got screwed over, except that it turns out that the American public wasn't buying what they were selling. But you can see this is they have taken it upon themselves at Google Global Affairs. And how do we prevent it from happening again? Now, Maybe they mean interference, right? Maybe they mean just, you know, Russian bots. Maybe that's what they're talking about. There's a second clip. And in the second clip, the same lady is talking about Elizabeth Warren and how Elizabeth Warren wants to break up Google. And she's saying, well, it's misguided. You need Google to be one big company, because as a big company, here's what they can prevent. Listen.
Elizabeth Warren is saying that we should break up Google. She's and like, I love her, but she is very misguided. Like, that will not make it better. It will make it worse, because now all these smaller companies who don't have the same resources that we do will be charged with preventing the next Trump situation. It's like a small company cannot do that. And it's like
preventing the next Trump situation. It's not preventing the next Russian interference in our election situation. It's the Trump situation. Now, I have long known about this as I do show prep. I can't Google anything for show prep. I'm telling you, because I will look for very specific things that I need information on, and I get returned back a bunch of inane, stupid, idiotic articles from ABC and CNN and nothing. I go to other places. I go to Real Clear Politics, for example, and by the way, they have both sides there. And I can search their archive. And that, for example, is a way better way for me to get background on something that I need to brush up on. So I already am very familiar with this. The other person, I'm not going to play the audio to this because they have kind of changed his voice. You know, they did like the witness protection thing because they've got an insider at Google who is spilling the beans on everything. Project Veritas does, right? They did a video and have a thorough interview. And this guy takes you through, for example, I'll do it right now in real time. So if you go into Google, you know how Google will auto suggest popular searches. Well, the one that if you go, let's say Donald Trump email, you get email address, list, sign up, address, Twitter, okay? But if you do the same thing for Hillary Clinton, it comes up empty. I'm doing it right now. Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton emails, Hillary Clinton email address, contact. There is nothing about Hillary Clinton's email, destroyed Hillary Clinton's emails, broke the law, anything. But yet, if you go, and he shows this, if you go into the back end of Google, you see the enormous volume of searches for precisely those terms. They monkey with the algorithm to literally prevent you and I, everybody out there who's Googling, to find out things that are relevant, actually to find out things that they want to find out. Because this, of course, also affects the results. I did some searches myself. I love the ones the girls are and how it completes. So girls are, and here's what Google suggests, likely to outperform boys in a something. Girls are like buses. I don't know what that is. Okay, girls are the same. Girls are made of. Girls are strong. Did I have the women one? The women one was the women can be pilots. Women can be, you know, can be whatever they want to be. Women can make as much money as men. Here's what men can. You ready for this? Google says men can't. You tell me if you think that these are real top searches, like for real. Men can, the first one back, men can have babies? Really? Men can have babies. Men can get pregnant. Men can have babies now. Men can have periods. Men can cook. Men can think about nothing. Per Google, 2 days ago when I printed this, that is what Google thinks are top searches. This is absurd. It's crazy. So how does this all shake out? I'll explain it when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Now, the first thing that Google did when this news story broke was to remove Project Veritas's video from YouTube. So their first response to this was, I would say, a legitimization of the argument that Google is censoring political information. Now, do you think any of this matters? One, I think this blows up in their face. I think that it is, you already have liberals and Elizabeth Warren being one of them, others on the stage these last two nights also were talking about breaking up big tech companies. I think that politicians get very nervous when big corporations have this much control. That's one part of it. The other part of it is that Google now delegitimizes itself as a true search engine, right? The fallout from this is, why would you use Google? Right? I mean, and by the way, what happens when Trump decides to push for, well, he's got 2 years left. I mean, can you break up Google? The answer is potentially yes. Trust busting is a thing. We haven't done it in a while. There's some old school precedent for it. And with some Democratic support in the Senate for it, I don't know. It is a precarious position for Google to be in. But I think that when you know, whether smoke is fire, when just a little bit of it comes out like this in a video, my suspicion is that it's way worse than what we even realize. And every time somebody tells you Russian bots, Trump, everything, Trump is winning in spite of tremendous opposition from Google, from the mainstream media, from a bunch of people who are going to be pulling out all the stops to see that he loses. And it will make his victory in 2020 that much sweeter and, frankly, more legitimate. Now, speaking of Trump and his 2020 race, big blow to it this week from an E. Jean Carroll. This lady wrote for some magazines, fleeting fame once upon a time, claims that Trump assaulted her at the Bergdorf Goodman dressing room in New York City. Bergdorf Goodman is a fancy department store for those of you who are not in the know. And I think it's right across the street. Isn't it across the street from the Plaza Hotel, which is a hotel that Trump briefly owned? Famous, made famous in Home Alone 2. Anyway, so Trump apparently, according to this lady, commits a violent assault of her, and here she is, Miss Carroll, talking about it on Anderson Cooper this Monday night.
You don't feel like a victim.
I was not thrown on the ground and ravished, which the word rape carries so many sexual connotations. This was not sexual. It hurt.
But I think most people think of rape it is a violent assault. It is not.
I think most people think of rape as being sexy. Mm.
Let's take a short break.
Think of the fantasies.
Mm. We're just going to take a quick break. If you can stick around, we'll talk more on the other side.
You're fascinating to talk to.
You should have go see it. It was awful. It was so awful. You know what Mitt Romney did? In Tuesday or Wednesday, Mitt Romney came out and said, yeah, this rape claim, it should be evaluated. It should be evaluated. This lady's insane. If Anderson Cooper thinks you're nuts, I think at that point, you know, these are the kind of crazies that the left has. And I think that all these bullets they're going to fire at Trump are blanks. All right. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. Here we go. Another show in the bag. Have a great weekend. Enjoy your time with family and friends. If you're not working, if you're working, do a good job. Make some money. You got to pay these taxes, which is free health care for every illegal immigrant. So got to get out there and work and make the moolah to pay for it. Have a good one. Love you all. Take care. People, keep on learning.